It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Thank you for joining me. Welcome to the next room. I'm sorry about the little glitch there, but, technology, what are you going to do? You know, it's so beautiful that it can connect us with our loved ones, especially during the whole COVID thing. You know, Zoom really came into play, and it was lovely to be able to see our loved ones because we couldn't physically travel across the country to see them. So can't live with it, can't live without it. My guest today is the fabulous Sarah Seidelman. Sarah is, oh goodness, where are we going to start? Okay, she is a doctor. She's a medical professional. She is an author. She's a shaman. She is a wonderful source of inspiration to all of us that know her. She is just an amazing woman. She has written so many books. I don't have all of them, but most of them. So I just want to show you. I talked about this yesterday, The Book of Beasties. It is a fabulous A to Z guide, illuminating wisdom of your spirit animals. A must-have for all of you that love beasties. This is the Daily Reader. It is How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get? And she did this with her spirit animal, Alice, right here, the elephant. And each day, Alice gives us her little perspective, and then Sarah takes us through her thoughts, and there's a little prayer in this book. I don't do anything without starting with this book. And her brand new, very first novel. It's Where the Deer Dream, kind of a coming of age, mystical, wonderful story about a young woman, and really great book. So, Sarah, welcome to the show. We're just going to dig right in.
Thank you so much, Jane. Oh my gosh, I'm so happy to be here and to be talking about this topic.
Yeah.
Death and dying and grief in between.
Well, let's start off with, just because that everyone that's watching, hopefully there are people watching and they didn't, take off when it got really weird with the technical side. Tell me about your pivot. You know, here you are, you were a blood doctor, right? What do you call that?
A pathologist, yes.
Pathologist. Okay. So you are working in a hospital, you're working every day, you're studying, and you're so involved with this. And then you sort of had a midlife crisis almost, or a pivot, when you were in your early 40s. Why don't you tell us what happened and how you went from being this medical professional to the shamanic, brilliant woman that you are now?
Well, so yes, I was a paid disease hunter. And to put this story very quick, you know, sort of make it short. So I was, you know, paid to identify and find disease. And I found myself in my early 40s realizing that I wasn't as fascinated with finding disease as much as I was starting to get more curious about what makes people well. Mm. And I took a sabbatical to sort of explore that and to see what might be there. And that summer, I stumbled into this ancient concept that the animals, that the wild animals in particular that cross your path, might have messages for you to help you. And normally I would have been like, that sounds insane, but thank you anyway. You know, thanks for sharing, because I was such a science, you know, a sort of left brain focused person at that time. But that summer, being really confused and feeling very not sure what to do next, I decided to play with this idea, and it turned out to be incredibly powerful for me. And eventually I stumbled fully onto the shamanic path, which is really a way of living and being where you feel that everything is, life is interconnected. You know, we're so interconnected with each other, with all of nature, all the wild creatures, the earth. And looking back, really my journey started, my call to step onto that path probably came back in medical school. In fact, when I was encountering a dying patient, and I remember taking care of this young woman, she was in her early mid-30s, and she was very ill, and we kept seeing her every day and reassuring her that, you know, we were doing everything we could. She was on a bone marrow transplant protocol for metastatic breast cancer. So she was a person with extensive bone metastasis, and we were attempting this very kind of heroic cure. And I remember the day my residence pager went off, and it was the news that this young woman had died. And I remember we both sat down in the stairwell. It was like one of those hospital stairwells, and we both just cried. And I think it was because, well, for me, it was because I just realized, oh my gosh, like we weren't able to help her. And I also felt like we really missed the boat. Like, this woman was dying and we weren't talking to her about that at all. We were talking to her about her platelet numbers and this and that. And I mean, I had no idea, was anybody talking to her about these most precious things? And of course, as a person trained in medicine, I had no idea how to talk, you know, especially that early in my career. And so I think really my call at midlife was to return to this hero's journey, which I really refused back then, which was to kind of attend to the soul of people. And I felt like that's what, sorry, I've got a timer going off. I feel like that's what really was missing for me in the practice of medicine and in my training. I just felt like our model of medicine was so mechanistic that in some areas, you know, we really were forgetting about the soul of the patient and the spirit of the patient, you know? Yeah. And so, yeah, hopping on that path and discovering the spirit animals, I discovered so much love and compassion through that way that I decided to eventually leave medicine and kind of devote my life to this work that I do now.
Was that, did that frighten you at all? I mean, that's a big thing to leave this. You went to school, you got certified to do this, you know, career path. And then all of a sudden you're like, yeah, I'm just not vibing with it. And I'm going to take a hard pivot. Was that frightening?
It was. It was definitely not one of these, hey, you know, I'm really liking spirit animals. I think I'll just quit my job.
Right.
I mean, it was a long, drawn out, you know, over, I would say, 2 years time that I really came to the final conclusion. And yeah, I talk about the golden handcuffs. You know, when you have a job that's paying you well to do something that you have liked for a long time. I mean, for me, I felt like, wow, am I going great? You know, is something wrong with me? Why can't I just be happy doing this? I should love my job. You know, I'm getting paid well to do this. And sometimes that, you know, that kept me there for a long time, because that fear of, you know, we had four kids to put through college, and I was feeling like, you know, I was one of the ones to contribute to that. So I definitely did not take it lightly, but at a certain point, I did, after my sabbatical, I went back like 2 days. I would go, you know, go in periodically when they needed extra help. I kind of got this bargain with my partners. And every time I would go back, I'd realize, wow, I can't do this anymore. It would be really, it's like going against myself. It would be almost like dying a little inside every day if I continue to work there. And that may sound dramatic, but maybe those of you who are out there listening who are in a job that feels like it's killing you, it's true. I mean, I think, you know, there is work that we get called to do that will bring us life, you know, that will make us more vital, that will make us more alive feeling. And that's definitely what the work I do now, it feels that way.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think that if you feel that your job is killing you, then it is. I mean, make no mistake. So after your sabbatical, is that when Swimming with Elephants came to be? Is that when you started to write that book?
That took me a few years to write. But yes, eventually I sat down to write, you know, the story of leaving, kind of the journey up until, you know, when I decided to take a sabbatical, and then this process of stepping onto this spiritual path, essentially. And I realized like how difficult that path was and how scary, and how it would be helpful if I could write out my story and show people that, yes, it's difficult and yes, it's very hard, but it's worth it, because there's something really beautiful at the end of that and on the way to it as well. And so at one point on my journey, I had this really strong call to go to India, which I'd always wanted to go to India my whole life. And I went there basically to pray in this giant pilgrimage they call the Kumbh Mela, which is the largest gathering of humanity on the planet. It takes place every 13 years, according to the stars. So it's an astrologic event. And I went there and to pray and just ask, like, I wanted to be useful, you know, in this new way, and to leave behind my medical practice and so forth. And as soon as I got back from the trip, the phone rang, and it was a person asking if I could come and do a shamanic healing for his wife, who was in hospice. And that moment, I get goosebumps when I tell this story because it brings me right back to that first patient who was dying. And I remember walking into the room, and it was in this hospice house that as a physician, I had helped raise money for and had argued with the community, we need this, we need this, we need to help people die so that it'll bring more life to our community. It will heal our, you know, the people backwards and forwards in the generation, you know. And when I got there and helped this beautiful woman, Molly, with her request to have a soul retrieval or to be healed spiritually before she died, it was such a privilege. And I just realized that I was doing exactly the work that I was put here to do, you know, in that moment. And so I tell her story in the book, Swimming with Elephants, because, yeah, if we don't tend our souls, you know, we're lost as a society, you know, and I feel like we've lost a little of that in the capitalism and the pursuit of, you know, and medicine becoming a bit of a, you know, a thing that is a profit driven thing, you know?
Yeah. Can you tell me about what happens? Like what did that process look like for Molly, this shamanic soul healing or this journey that you're taking her on? Here she's getting ready to cross over to the next room. What happens? What do you do? Can you explain that?
Well, that day was really interesting. I walked in and I spoke with her husband and introduced myself. And then I left to go tell the nurses, you know, like, can we have some privacy for a little while? Even though it was hospice, you know, they have people coming and going. And as I went out there, her husband came out and he grabbed my arm and he's like, I can't believe what happened. And I was like, what's happening? And she said, he said, she hasn't been talking for 3 weeks. And she just spoke to you like it was no problem. You know, she spoke to me in full sentences and was like, thank you so much for coming. He's like, she hasn't even been awake. And wow. So this is just kind of this strange thing that can sometimes happen. Like, I think when we know we were ready for this healing, I don't know, but, and they talk about this when people are dying, that there can be this, like a last rally. And anyway, so then I went back in the room and I just asked, you know, she told me when I asked her before we started the healing, what is your intention? And she said, I feel like parts of me are missing and I need them. And so we turned the lights down. We wrote blue, you know, set a candle. And then I called all my loving and compassionate spirits to come be with us. And I invited them to invite whoever they pray to. They were a Native American family. So, we didn't speak about who they called to, but I imagine that she was calling Mother Earth and Father Sky and, you know, maybe other sacred beings that she prays to. And then I drummed. And actually, in that case, I listened on my earbuds because I didn't want to drum and disturb other people there. So I listened on my earbuds to the drum. And then I just asked my helping spirits, what does Molly need? And they showed me two of her soul parts that had gone missing. You know, this idea in shamanic work that as we're conceived, we each have this beautiful soul that's a golden ball of light, you might imagine, like something so precious and beautiful, it's hard for us to even comprehend. And in life, we have experiences like traumatic experiences where we can lose part of our soul. Sometimes we give it away to somebody else out of love and compassion, hoping it'll help somebody else. But in any case, we need these soul parts, both to be alive and also, we say, to make that crossing. We need all the power of our soul to actually be able to die is another perspective. And hers, I remember there was one was a beautiful piece of amethyst that came back. And another was a beautiful sage plant, a beautiful green plant that's very aromatic and used for cleansing and things like that in many spiritual traditions. And these parts of her soul came back and I told her what they came back as they returned to her. And it was really just beautiful. And I remember in that moment, her husband and her one daughter that was able to be there, they were both just crying in the room. We were, you know, it's just very moving experience. And then in the end, she was very quiet. And I finally said, you know, if you'd like, you know, if you want to share anything you want to share, you know, the healing's complete now. And she opened her eyes and she said, I was never baptized as, you know, as a person. So I never knew what that was until today. And wow. So that was her experience of the spirit. So these ways are very old and very ancient. And all I can say is just they're very beautiful. And it gives us a way to get this help from these other realms, these spiritual realms where there is wisdom and love and compassion beyond what any of us can imagine. and they can come and help us do, you know, and to heal ourselves. And when I was on my sabbatical, I received some soul pack parts being returned to me. One of them was the spirit of the part of me that is a writer, which was so touching. And it came back in the form of a beautiful leather bound journal. And that was so amazing because I had kind of hidden that part for myself, thinking, well, if I go into medicine, I'll never write books or never, that could never be a possibility for me because it'll be enough for me to take care of my kids and try to do this overwhelming career of medicine. So when that gift came back to me, it was just really precious. And I've enjoyed now working with it. Not to say that writing is easy.
No.
As you know, with your beautiful new book that you just published. But it's such a gift to work with spirit and to express ourselves and to share whatever's inside of us with the world.
Yeah. If you're watching right now and you're like, I need this woman in my life, findyourfeelgood.com. That's probably the best place to send everyone. Sarah's like,
Follow your feel good.
Follow your feel good. Thank you. Followyourfeelgood.com. So Sarah has a very active group on Facebook. She has gathered a lot of fun people. She'll do 100-day projects. A lot of people are busting a move and finding their creative bone, whether it's through writing, producing music, writing a play, creating acrylic art. It's so inspiring to see your tribe of people that are really doing these things that they always had a passion or desire to do, but never came forward with it. And you seem to be able to kind of like extricate that from individuals. It's really a gift. So.
Yeah, I realize that that's one of the things that makes us healthy is through this creative self-expression. It's one of the things that brings us life. So if your life is feeling dead, find something you're drawn to and creatively play with it because it will take you, it will heal you, it will do so many things for you. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really something. Follow your feel good. Let's talk about I want to get to all of them, but let's talk about this because this is your very first novel. So your first book's right here. I want to see if I got a good camera.
Not
good.
Looks great.
Where the Deer Dream. Okay. So prior to this, you're writing your life. You're writing real life things. You're writing from this different space. So to cross over to this novel, where did it come from?
Years ago, I got this review from a newspaper writer that said at the very end of the review, she said, wow, I would really love to see some fiction from this woman, you know, this writer, because I thought to myself, well, that's so weird. I've never thought about writing fiction. And at the end of writing my memoir, one thing about memoir is you have to tell the truth, right? And so for me, that meant I had to get all kinds of people involved. My mom, my sister, my good friend. Going through all these details, does this sit well with you? Are you okay if I publish this? You know, everything had to be like vetted and, you know, the way I wanted to do it, like in a good, harmonious way, or at least that's how I hope to do it. And so fiction just was like, wow, you can write whatever you want. I mean, it's a free license, which actually was quite overwhelming it because when you can choose anything, it's like, well, what do you, because it can be hard to choose, right? But I did in the book, I wanted to address, some of the themes that are really powerful and important to me, which is, the difference between spiritual healing and, you know, traditional allopathic medicine. Some of the themes are mother-daughter relationships, the invisible world and spirit animals are definitely part of this. So if you enjoy sort of mystical themes and things like that, it might be a book you'd enjoy.
It's a fun read. It is a really fun read. I'm a big fan of Mira. Really great. This book, How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get? Which is pretty much from Follow Your Feel Good, right? You're encouraging all of us to follow what feels good to us and to live an authentic, creative, beautiful life. So this book, it's a daily reader. And, you know, how did you find inspiration? Like, so you're... Alice, your elephant, she speaks to you every day, or you went and you just asked her a question. I mean, this is 365 days.
Yes. How it started was a 100-day project. And so,
oh, okay.
Or if you're listening and you're kind of curious, there's a website, the100dayproject.org. You can go read all about these. But essentially what I did is I decided to do for 100 days, I was going to visit with Alice and ask her for a message that I could share with everybody publicly. And I asked her if she'd be open to that. And she was super excited about it. So I was like, awesome. And so I did it every day for 100 days, which is no small feat. And then I created a little piece of art to go with each message, and which I eventually turned into a deck of cards. But these messages were so beautiful. After 100 days, you know, some people were like, oh, I hope you make it into a book. Or, oh, can you make these into cards? Or, oh, like, I don't want to stop getting these beautiful messages from Alice. And so I decided to turn it into a 365-day a year book, which was, yeah, that was quite a project. 100,000 words later, but it was such a joy for me because, and when you're thinking about, if you're thinking about creating a 100-day project for yourself, you want it to be something that's short and doable, like 15 minutes or less, and something that's really enchanting for you, not like something that you... You know, we all have to do so many things that we have to do because, you know, we've got kids to take care of, we got to walk the dog or, you know, whatever.
Toilet to clean. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So make it something enchanting. And for me, I had gotten so busy as a healer. I was like, I don't get to visit Alice just for fun anymore. A lot of times I'm visiting her, you know, to help other people so much. And I want to just go for the joy of learning from her. And so it was really a wonderful project for me because yeah. Alice has got a lot of wisdom.
Well, I'm telling you, bravo, because for a woman who has like Journey to the Heart, Melody Beattie is my go-to and has been for years. I have went through, no lie, at least four of my own copies because I leave them outside and they get rained on or whatever, sun damage. But I love that book. I gift that book to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And then you came through with this and I'm like, oh, I love it. So now it's Journey to the Heart and then this. So even like just today. So here we're on November 14th, Return to Owner. When you're desperate to heal an estranged or strained relationship, begin by letting it go. Let it all be. This condition can restore peace. So that's Alice. And then from there, Sarah will chime in. And then at the end, she'll put in a little prayer. Dear God, help me let go of anybody's soul parts I'm hanging on to so we can both be free. I mean, just beautiful, really lovely, rich messages. This book, I'm telling you, peeps, great gift for the holidays right here. What is going on with you next? Like what, I mean, you... There doesn't seem to be a day that doesn't go by that I think to myself, where do you get the energy? You do the Hummingbird podcast series, which you just had me on your show. It was so much fun. You've written all of these books. You're creating. You work with clients one-on-one. You're doing shamanic healing. You studied to be a death doula. My goodness, child. Do you find time for yourself? I mean, you're not wearing yourself too thin, are you?
No, I get a lot of energy from everything that I do. And I think that's part of like, I think as you allow this creativity to flow through you, there's just like this unending, you know, stream of it. But that being said, I do feel this shift into making more art. And I definitely feel a little like I felt 11, 12 years ago, like, oh, I'm on the cusp of a little bit of something different. And so I've been kind of putting a few more boundaries around my work life and opening up more space to paint and doing a lot of painting with spirit. So just asking, you know, spirit to show me what it wants to paint. And it's just been a really, really neat process. And it's kind of like beginner's mind again, like starting all over again. Like I know very little about art and I've been learning so much over the last couple of years, kind of in my spare time. But I'm really excited about that. And I'm excited to this next chapter, just to encourage other people to create, whether it's writing their book or we're starting a new class we're going to teach in the, December. We're going to help people who want to get their book written in 2022, because I think we all need support, right? I mean, yes. It's not something you do alone, and we need cheerleading, and we need a place, a safe place to land when we're creating something that's very vulnerable and tender and beautiful. And so, yeah, so I feel like that's where I'm probably headed next.
Well, let's talk about that course. So it's Follow Your Feel Good. So if anybody's out there and you've had this burning desire to finally get your book written, how do they go about it? Is it going to be a Zoom class? How are we going to work this out?
Yeah, it's going to be three in January. They're going to be three. So January's going to be kind of intense. We're going to have three weekly Zoom meetings that month. And then it's going to be a total of 4 months. So then there's going to be three longer spaced out months where we're going to gather once a month, but we're going to have this intensely sort of supportive Facebook group. You will not be reading anybody else's work. You will not be asked to share your work with anybody else. Okay. This is just for the purpose of getting it done. So we've just noticed that, my friend Inger and I, who's also an author and a coach, that it's just sometimes we just need that accountability. We need that structure. We need that support. And we need the kind of a circle, you know, to kind of be like, we're doing this. And when are we doing it? We're doing it this week. We're starting now. Like, we don't need to become a brilliant writer to write our first book. We don't have to become a grammatical genius either. Like, we're going to try to bust through a lot of the myths which stop us. One of the things I think I hear most from women is like, well, wouldn't it be selfish if I took the extra time or resources or money to like focus on my writing? And what we want to remind people is like, no, it's the most generous thing you could do, because when you do that, you will give your kids, your grandchildren, your friends, your mother, your sister, your aunt, like everybody permission to do whatever it is they're longing to do. Right. You know, it's this. It's just like, let's set all of ourselves free from that guilt or that house cleaning. Like, well, the house is going to get messy. Yes, the house does get messy. And it's okay. It'll always get messy. I mean, like, no matter what happens, the house will always get messier. But your book, it's like I always say, like, no, your book, an unwritten book could haunt you on your deathbed the way a dirty closet floor might not, you know?
Oh, no kidding.
Because it gives our soul meaning to tell these stories or to share our wisdom, or even if we're writing it for that one person who needs to hear something that you needed to hear, you know, and are so grateful for. So really excited.
Or for just yourself. You know, I found that when I was writing that it was super cathartic just for me. It was like this gift that I was giving to myself every day, because I was showing up for myself, and I had to kind of get out of the way of thinking about, oh, is anybody gonna buy it? Or, oh, you know, it's like, ah, that's just your ego. You know, just do it for the pure love and passion of that project. So that's awesome. So absolutely. followyourfeelgood.com. I hope we still have a little bit of time since we got started. So oh, sure we do. We're just gonna keep going until they do the whole, the hook where they I love this book. I actually turned The Grave Woman onto it last night.
Awesome.
The Book of Beasties, because she told me, oh, she's fabulous, by the way. You need to meet her.
Yes.
She's just beautiful. Joelle Simone Anthony, The Grave Woman. Just look her up, follow her. She is such a bright star. Anyway, she had told me that she had this really cool dream, and she just like woke up from it and said, it's the octopus. The octopus is my spirit animal. Ooh. And she was so excited. And so I was like, hang on a second. I ran in the house, got my Beasties book, brought it out and read to her a few things about it. Nice. This book, I go to it all the time. Like, I'll be on a walk with the puppy and all of a sudden we'll see a wild coyote. And I'll come home and grab the book and I read all about it. Whenever a beastie, I cross a path with it, I just love it. I just find so much generous spirit and so much education from this book. This had to take you forever. I mean, it's really a very intense book. I mean, here, look at beautiful illustrations. This is all about the bee, and it's really great. How did you find all this information?
Well, I opened up a ceremony and invited all the animal spirits that wanted to be part of the book to join me. And then I have loads and loads of references and old timey, strange Victorian children's books about animals. I have all kinds of stuff and lots of stories because, you know, I did a podcast for a couple years on spirit animals. And then I've got, you know, hundreds of stories from my clients and my own life. And you know, when people are dying, it's amazing. At the same hospice house that I was telling you where I went to do that healing, there's a beautiful story I'll just share because I loved it so much. This is just one of many stories, but a man who was dying, he had a couple strokes. So he had expressive aphasia, meaning he was unable to express himself verbally anymore or even with writing. Which made it really, really difficult. You can imagine, like they didn't, you know, couldn't ask questions, couldn't get great answers. And one day he was a woodworker. And one day they brought him, they're like, Dad, we're bringing you these pieces of wood because they know he loved to work with his hands. And so he began carving and he was really intensely working on it. And they weren't sure what was happening. But eventually they realized the night before he died that what he was carving was an owl. And they're all like, oh, that's so cool. We're so glad we brought that wood. And as he was finishing this face that night, he died. And that night, a great horned owl flew into the tree right outside the window and stayed there for 24 hours.
Wow.
And these kind of stories happen over and over. They're absolutely magical. And this is really what I heard stories like that over and over again when I did my call-in show for a couple of years. And it was just like, I give up. Like, I don't even know what this is. It is magic and it is love and it is compassion. And it's like, it goes beyond words. It settled everybody. The whole family just felt like all is well. It's okay. Dad knows he's connected. There's something happening here that nobody, it's just a great mystery. And it's such an honor to help people make those connections and to watch them make those connections because it is just amazing.
Yeah, animals are just so spiritual. You know, if we could behave more like animals, yes. I think that we'd be a lot more peaceful society.
Yeah, a shaman who I love once said during a ceremony, he said, you know, the reason that we love animals so much is that they're innocent. And we are not. You know what they are. And so they're just so inspiring because we want to be. I mean, at some level we are. At the level of soul, I think we are.
Yeah, we give it a whirl. But then, you know, being human pops back in and you say things that are unkind and you do unkind things and you have unkind thoughts. And, you know, we just have to kind of examine ourselves every day and try to get to a more compassionate, loving place in our hearts, you know. It's really interesting. Yeah, being human is no joke, right?
Yeah, and I think that's what we're here to learn too, is that compassion for ourselves. I've been working on that. I got a new self-compassion workbook by Kristen Neff, and I'm really getting ready to dig into that because I think we can all benefit. Because the more compassion we could be with ourselves, then the more compassionate we can be with others. And
yeah. Yeah. And speaking about compassion, I mean, that's what this entire beautiful Dying Expo has been all about. And education in our beautiful community that we've created. And Michelle and Christy have done such a loving job, and all of the volunteers. I mean, I just spent the better part of all weekend in this studio, and I cannot believe the education that I ended up with about green burials, for one thing. And, you know, the Final Exit Network, really great information and compassionate and care. And, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and, you know, just unbelievable. The session with Patch yesterday and Yvonne Heath. Yvonne was just doing a thing right before we came on. And it was about, she was talking about some of the most important things that you can do for someone that is getting ready to transition, or they have transitioned, and how do you show up for the family? And that was it. Just show up, you know, just be there. You know, you don't have to really do anything but be present for that person. And so that was a lovely session. So you've got your project that you're going to do where you're going to encourage people to write their book because they need to do that. What else do you have for us with Follow Your Feel Good, Sarah Seidelman?
Yeah. Well, one of the other things that I've really become interested in after my death doula training and my kind of dying consciously training, I learned sort of a lot about how to prepare somebody to die and, you know, how to be present and these things. And what I realized was the way I wanted to use some of that work is to really help people live. And so I developed a little curriculum where we take people through a process where you sort of face your own death. I kind of like to think of it as like a Pink Baskin-Robbins spoon type small taste of it. But to ask ourselves and like, okay, because none of us knows how long we have, you know, to live, right? We don't know how many days. And so how do we live, you know, with integrity and do the things that we came here to do and do the things that matter most and prioritize those things? And so we gathered before COVID, right before COVID, I held the first live in-person event, and it was so powerful. One of the things we did for each other is we had people lie down and we did a traditional, it comes from the Andean shamanic tradition, but we essentially gave people a small taste of what it's like to die by lifting their light body up away from their physical body just for a moment. And it's thought that when you do that, there can be a lot of healing can happen in that moment. A lot of like letting go of anything that isn't necessary can happen in that moment. And then we come back down. But what we would do is before we would do that, it was we would sort of have a brief remembering of that person as if they were actually dying. And so we would read the, not the obituary, the eulogy that they had written. So they would write a brief eulogy. I would write one for myself, for example, and they would read that out loud. So remembering what was important to me, like, what do you want to be remembered for? What do you want to be your legacy? What do you want people to talk about at your funeral? Like, man, you know, she threw great parties, or you're like, what is it that you want them to remember? And that was just so moving and so powerful to watch people at the end of that weekend, like claim what was absolutely their, you know, like their ride or die priorities. Like, it became so clear. One woman I remember was like, I am going to, I'm going to go spend time with my aunt, my great aunt, and I'm going to go over there every week because it's important to me. I love her and I know she's dying. And it's like, I'm dropping extra work. We don't need the extra money. Forget about it. I'm going to prioritize this. And other people were like, I'm going to write my book. I'm going to start going back to school so I can work in a different job, you know, but it was beautiful.
Awesome. You know what? We're going to have to, we're getting the hook.
It's all good.
We're getting pulled off a stage, Sarah. How dare they? We could go all day. Thank you so much. I mean, I know it's family time for you on Sunday, and I know you have a million creative projects, but just thank you so much for showing up and for sharing your brilliant, bright light. Sarah Seidelman's my guest. It's followyourfeelgood.com, Book of Beasties, How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get? Yay. And then good. Thank you. Since I don't have three hands, I am not an octopus. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. And thank you to everyone that's attending the Beautiful Dying Expo. I will be back live on the main stage at 4 o'clock with Jesse Brezendine. So thank you so much for joining us. Thanks, Sarah.
Bye, Jane. Thank you.
Bye now.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to the next room.